Hi, and welcome back to the Defunct Land Patreon podcast. My name is Kevin Perjurer. Today, I am here with a very special guest. Robert plays that Ertz game.
Please, Kevin, Robert plays is my father. You could call me Rob Plays.
I met your father, and I think I made that joke, and I don't think he got it.
Now I'm trying to go back. When did you meet my dad?
We saw each other at Toy Story Land.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember now. Yes. It was like in passing.
And you were on a, and you were riding a hot piece of ass.
What?
You were riding a hot piece of ass when I met your dad.
Okay. We were in Alien Sherlock. Wow. You have
saucers on a summer day.
Yeah. Okay. You have a way better, recollection of that day than I did.
It was one of the best days of my life. I met Robert Plays Sr.
And we were just headed. We were about to ride. Yeah. We were about to ride ass. Yeah. And
yeah. No, I watched you ride ass.
Yeah. I mean, I invite anyone to watch me, you know, it's all open out in the open like that when you ride it is so yeah. Anybody can walk right up and just watch, you know.
Riding ass.
All right. So that very much established what kind of podcast this is. So now I feel like I'm up to speed.
Yeah. You're more prepared now. Yeah. It's not that serious. For those of you that don't know, ASS stands for Alien Swirling Saucers. And one day I met Rob's father when he wrote Alien Swirling Saucers in Toy Story Land. So Rob, how have you been?
I've been actually really good. You know, aside from upgrading the computer and it's running amazing and it's made actually editing so much easier. I've been having a good time researching things that I never thought I'd research before, and so that's been pretty fun.
What are some of those things?
I just finished you ever heard of Land of Oz in North Carolina? It's like,
have I? Yeah, I know people ask me to do that all the time.
Did you tell them it's not like really defunct because, you know, it still opens every year?
I don't speak to these individuals. Oh. I just get messages.
Well, yeah. That it was a daily thing in the summer and then it wasn't and now it's back, but of course now it's not because of, you know, the pandemic and everything. But it was a cool little immersive walkthrough Wizard of Oz based park in North Carolina, and I don't know, it's fun digging into those sort of things that I feel like last year or earlier I wouldn't have even considered, but the whole new scope of the channels made that I don't know, more of a possibility.
Yeah, so Rob, you change your channel from Rob Plays to Midway to Main Street. It's a whole branding rechange. Any regrets? Or are you digging it?
I regret that I waited as long as I did to do it. Because Rob Plays made no sense for a channel name. And it didn't when I changed it. And it didn't 5 years before when I still had it. And I was like so afraid of the algorithm, because like we don't know how anything works at YouTube, and so I was terrified if I changed the channel name that would just kill any SEO ranking any of my videos had, so I just never did it. And so it took the channel kind of getting into a slump for me to go like, all right, you know what, whatever, it can't get any worse than this. And nothing really changed, so I kind of wish I had done it years ago.
Still bad.
Still. it started. You know what I noticed? YouTube likes when you upload videos. That's what I learned this past year.
It doesn't like when I do it.
It doesn't like when you upload videos? I think it likes. I think it doesn't care when you upload videos. It just likes your videos.
Yeah, whenever I upload videos, Yeah. I just, you know, it's like my math problem's like the opposite. I was like, how long does it take to make this video? Is it, why would I put two videos out every month instead of just once a month? And it's getting really tempting just to go once a month with everything. So try not to, but it's tempting.
See, the trade-off there, though, is when, you know, you have large gaps between your videos, but that you put out like 40-minute long videos that are fully fledged documentaries. I found out YouTube's not a fan when you take a month between your videos and they're still 5 minute videos.
Yeah, so
I learned I can't do that.
Your videos are, We make very different types of videos.
Yeah. Which is good.
Very, very different types of videos.
That's, but you know what I noticed? Good. That's like a big part of the theme park.
This video that I'm working on right now.
Oh, I know about this video you're working on right now. I'm excited for it.
It's rough. It's a rough video. It's taken a long, 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 long time.
Yeah, but it'll pay off.
I'm very, oh no, it will never pay off.
It'll pay off. It'll pay off creatively.
This is literally a vanity, not a vanity. It's a passion project.
So it'll pay off personally.
Yeah. I mean, I just increased the budget again. I'm just funneling money into this stupid project. It's so expensive.
I mean, I thought it was surprising you're putting this much money into your own Land of Oz video, but I did have to beat you to it, and I'm going to steal the wind out of your sails.
You stole everything.
Do you find, like, are you having fun with it, though, because it's so, I don't know, out of the ordinary?
No.
Okay.
No, I never have fun. No. No, I am having fun. It's been interesting, but it also is scary because it feels like I'm so far away. It feels like I'm so far from being done.
Right.
Even though I'm not, but I am. It's scary.
This one's kind of out of the ordinary, so I imagine a lot of it feels very different. But for your normal videos, like how formulaic is the process, or like how structured is your process that you can feel like, oh, this is close to done, or this is, a quarter of the way done?
Oh,
or is it all over the place? Okay.
It's pretty predictable. I mean, I edit a video at about a minute, a polished minute every hour. Which includes finding references and whatnot, and give or take. And so I know when a video is going to roughly be done, unless I'm adding a bunch of stuff. Because by the time because it's so structured, and then I write the script and I know basically how long it's going to be, and then I record it, and then I get the audio back from Nate, and then I know exactly how long it's going to be. Then I know how long I have to edit.
Right.
I am doing 1,000 things, so I'm really not that concerned with like where and when things are like going on, because I'm also managing all of the socials and doing themed alternative stuff and doing I'm writing another Defunctland episode, and I'm editing this one, or I'm reviewing Defunct TV stuff, or doing this and that.
Get it. You're so accomplished and so.
I just listed like three things that are not accomplishment. Yeah, themed alternative is just so popular, and everybody's just talking about it's in the newspaper. Yeah. No, these are all just passion projects. And I always send my scripts to you. I always read my scripts to you. Yeah. And so I guess we can just talk about behind the scenes. So that is pretty on brand for what we should be talking about, I think. But Rob and I talk production a lot.
Yeah.
But I always call Rob whenever I have every season 3 episode, when I've always called him and read him the script at some point in the process when I need somebody to listen to the script. And I have not done that with this one because there's no script.
Well, it was weird. You called me and then it was just like 20 minutes of you just sitting there in silence. And all I heard was breathing. It was just silence for 20 minutes. And I was like, who is this? Stop calling me. There was nothing there. And then you said, what do you think? And I was like, who are you?
Yeah, that was basically it. And so this video, for those of you that don't know, is the intermission episode of season 3. So it's 20 to 30 minutes. And it's done all orchestral. And it's very interesting. I hope you all like it. I think it's going to be okay. Recently, I spent the past 4 days on After Effects, Rob.
Oh, that's fun.
Making these map transitions.
Map transitions. What does that mean?
So like I transitioned the 1975 map of Epcot to the 1976, the 1977.
Okay.
And so you can see the progression of how Future World came to be.
That's cool. So is it a lot of like lining up the maps so that, it's got a smooth, like, elements fading in and,
Yeah. So like things shift. Okay. So like it starts in the original theme center structure, and then it slowly moves over. I see people in the chat are saying Epcot didn't open until 82. Yes, but they started planning it before it opened.
I heard they didn't. I heard they winged it a month before it opened. Yeah. They were like, what do we put here?
Yeah, what do we do? So it starts with the first concept map, and then it shows how it slowly shifted. And then it shifted in. It went from a 3-branch thing to a 2-branch thing. And then it went to Future World, where all the pavilions separated. So for a while, it was like East Mall, West Mall. And the East Mall had health, energy, space. And then the West Mall had like transportation and the other stuff, energy. Then the branch, it leaves the branch and the pavilions space out, and you get to see it through the progression. So
that's pretty cool.
So that's been a long time. And I imagine you can knock out a whole video in that amount of time.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I started editing the Land of Oz thing yesterday, and I'm going to export it once we're done with this. So, you know, although it's funny, I don't know. I struggle with, I don't know how you do it, because I've done a few videos that are like, you know, 20 to 30 minutes long, and it's a struggle for me. I feel like I'm done, like, once I write the script, because I've learned what I wanted to learn from it. And so it becomes like, the formality is the making the video part, which is why I do better with these 5-minute videos, because I spend more time researching than editing. When it flips around, that's when it starts to feel like a struggle for me.
So back to what we're talking about. So each attraction has its own theme. And then that was the end. And then you go, like, so you see them being constructed. But it starts, we're getting premium B-roll shot. Matthew's in L.A. right now casting people for it.
Wait, what?
Did you hear that?
You're getting B-roll?
Or did you?
I mean, I heard what you said. I just didn't process. Yeah. You're getting B-roll of people?
It starts with a orchestra. It starts with like the curtains closing on the last part of Adventure Through Inner Space, the previous episode, and then it's like this big theater, and people get up and walk outside for like intermission, and you kind of see like some B-roll feet, and then like you see a playbill that says Defunct Land season 3, and then people go back, the lights flash, people go back inside, they sit down, and then the orchestra stands up, and you see a guy with the playbill, and on one side he has it says Act 1, and it has every episode in season 3 Act 1, so all the 12 episodes we've already done, and then the conductor gets up to the orchestra, and he taps like his little baton, and you see on his sheet music, the conductor's sheet music, it says Defunct Land season 3 Overture, and then he begins. And so that's premium B-roll that we have to shoot.
Man.
We have a theater called the Frida in LA that we're getting that shot at. And then it goes into a sequence of, it goes back to 1966, and then it pans out from a TV. This is also premium B-roll. And it's Marty Sklar watching it on the TV, even though he wouldn't have got that on his TV, but he's Marty Sklar in his home. And we just do it kind of through like feet and hands and back of head kind of stuff, that kind of B-roll. We're not going to try to find someone that looks just like him or try to portray him. But you see around his house, you can tell it's Marty Sklar. And then he gets a call from Card Walker
that he needs to go to the studio. He shows up to the studio, and there's at the table is Card Walker, Don Tatum, and Roy Disney. And they tell him that Walt is dead and he has to write his obituary. And then we go into archival footage, and then like archival footage happens. And then it goes from 1966 to 1974, so that's all through archival footage. They build Walt Disney World through 1966, 1971, and then in 1974, we go back to premium B-roll. Marty's at his house again. He gets another call from Card Walker. This time, it's about what they should do. What did they do with Epcot? Then we go into the sequence of them planning Epcot and the original plan and how it changed over time. And then they come together and they push together the two tables of World Showcase and Epcot Center. And then that starts the 10-minute sequence of every pavilion's development and construction. And so like ground breaks, and then it goes around the horn, and then every pavilion's development and construction. And then it ends with all everything opening on October 1st. And then the rest of the season progresses. So that's the idea.
I'm pumped.
How do you handle jokes in your videos?
Usually I write them and then I record them while I'm making the video. And then as I'm editing them, I go, that wasn't very funny. And then I get rid of them. And so
that's what I do. So I do that. I do that a lot.
Yeah. It's a joke that I'm really happy and proud of and think is funny, but it's the one joke in 7 minutes of no jokes. And so it feels a little out of place. And, you know, I cut it then because, you know, I want to keep the tone a little consistent. Although I've been trying to do a little bit better at trying to maybe not put in jokes necessarily, but get a little more casual with the script writing so it feels more like somebody telling you a story rather than like watching a documentary. And, you know, that gives new opportunities to throw little jokes in here and there. But yeah, I've done a few jokes that I think ended up, you know, working well, but it's very few and far between.
Yeah, I read you my jokes, and sometimes you don't laugh, and I'm like, cut it.
And then sometimes I do laugh, and then you don't.
And then I don't cut it. Sometimes you laugh, and I cut it anyways.
So what you're saying is to everybody listening right now, I might be the person at fault for why you might not be hearing certain jokes that, for all I know, were great, and I just didn't get them at the time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the jokes, I never want it to seem like I'm trying to make a joke.
Right.
And especially, you know,
and you do that well. You talk about how you want to avoid also the low hanging fruit and find the jokes behind that. Right. And I think you pull that off really well.
Thank you. And, you know, there has been jokes where I've been like, oh, that feels like I'm trying to be funny. I never want to try to be funny. I just want to be funny. Right. Or, you know, it's a lot easier in the videos on older topics, which is why I like doing them so much, is because they're so necessary because it's so dry sometimes.
Yeah.
But then like Adventure Through Inner Space, there was like no room for jokes in there.
Plus the further back you go, the more opportunity you have to poke fun at because society just changed so much over, you know, so many years that it's right. easier to make fun of just the weird things we did or thought, you know, 100 years ago.
And nobody's alive.
Yeah,
and nobody's children is
nobody
alive.
Nobody can be offended personally because they're all dead.
I found out two wonderful things while researching for this episode that are completely unrelated to the episode. Number one, have you seen this like Project Future thing in Florida that they have?
Is this the Venus Project?
Yes, the Venus Project. Do you know what that is?
I don't know what it is, but I know when I did a video years back on whether I thought Epcot, like Walt's Epcot, would work or not, and a lot of people mentioned it, and I had never followed up and looked into it, but it was thrown around a lot.
Beyond politics, poverty, and war. It's like and he died like a couple years ago, so it's now just like operating in this guy's memory, I guess.
The website here, it looks like Apple's newest headquarters is what they were going for. It's just a giant.
Yeah, I mean, they use radial design, which has been proven to be bad.
But looks good.
It looks good. It looks futuristic, but it has been proven to not work. I don't know. It's just I watched this video of what they do, and I don't know what they do. I'm like, it's like, is it?
And that's kind of how these things are designed intentionally. They don't want you to know what it is because then you could pick it apart more easily.
Like they have, okay, so they have resource-based economy, which already I'm like, uh-oh.
So what? You're just trading food for, just back to bartering resources?
No, money for, I don't know. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. We didn't think about how to create problems.
Yeah,
Albert Einstein said.
Yeah,
that's like saying like it's like we can't have good intentions because that's what got us into this mess. Okay, here we go. Let's just read some about this. A global problems faced by humanity today are impacting individuals and nations rapidly. Climate change, famine, war, epidemics of deadly diseases, and environmental pollution contribute to the long list of global challenges we as humans need to promptly address before an eventual catastrophe swiftly becomes inevitable. Regardless of political philosophy, religious beliefs, or social customs, all socioeconomic systems ultimately depend upon natural resources, such as clean air and water, arable land, and the necessary technology and personnel to maintain a high standard of living. That feels already disproven by our current economic system.
Well, also, that it does this, I mean, it's the very convenient of, like, regardless of, you know, politics or, yeah, or culture or anything like that, which definitely everybody's just going to totally give up their own free, yeah, will and not have, we won't have to address it at all. Didn't you hear? We said regardless.
Yeah, regardless. Modern society has access to highly advanced technologies and can make available food, clothing, housing, medical care, a relevant education system, and develop a limitless supply of renewable, non-contaminating energy such as geothermal, solar, wind, and tidal. It is now possible to have everyone on Earth enjoy a very high standard of living with all the amenities that a prosperous civilization can provide. This can be accomplished through the intelligent and humane application of science and technology. This is like, this is so generic.
You know what this
is?
You know what this is? This is what happens if you watch too many Next Generation episodes back to back. Listen, it's a great show, but you cannot marathon it because this is what happens. You can't get to sleep.
Tell me what it is. Tell me what this is. All right, here we go. It goes on. Individuals and interest groups are governed by laws that demand maximum profit when possible. These laws are inherent in the monetary system prevalent in most countries today, capitalism. The basic principles of capitalism demand exponential growth and at all cost cutting, causing financial cataclysms such as the 1929 Great Depression in the United States and the recent financial crisis of 2007 and 08. This feels like high school level understanding of economics. Like, when did money be bad?
It's
the 20s,
but you know, but it's the distraction. It's the distraction, because if you go to their website and you look at projects, which I'm like, oh great, what are they doing to make this a reality? Their top.
Hold on, we're not there, okay, yet. We're not. Don't skip ahead.
Okay.
I'll let you read the okay projects part. But we are separated by borders and beliefs, which makes it impossible for us to arrive at relevant solutions while being divided ideologically. Most of our problems today are technical, but we're still looking for solutions through political means. We need to accept that eliminating these global threats requires the employment of methodologies rather than personal opinions. Again, nothing has been said about what we're going to do. The Venus Project proposes a holistic approach with a global socioeconomic system that utilizes the most current technological and scientific advances to provide the highest possible living standard for all people on Earth. Okay, so they've just said this is what it does, and it has, that's nothing. That doesn't mean anything.
Right. Okay. You got to put that into action. So that's why they have this project section here.
Hold on. No, I'm not.
We're not there yet. Okay. I'm not even sure what you're reading, to be honest, because I'm on another page.
The proposed system is called a resource-based economy. The term and meaning was created by Jacques Fresco, the founder of the Venus Project. Here we go. In a resource-based economy, all goods and services are available to all people without the need for means of exchange, such as money, credits, barter, or any other means.
Oh, just everybody gets everything.
Everybody, they can't get it. They get what they, yeah. I love, that's what I love about these things. It is completely generic. And it's the same thing with Walt's Epcot project. It like grabs you in with these big words that mean nothing. And then it's like, well, what are you going to do? And they're like, here's the plan. If they're poor, we evict them. And they're like, whoa. Like,
this seems like the kind of society that if it was built would be toppled by one thief. Like, that's all you need. You need one person to be like, I'm going to take more than I need because I want to. And they're going to be like, no, we don't do that here, but I'm going to do that. And then everything unravels. It's, you pulled the one string and it all falls apart. City's on fire 24 hours later.
Then it says, for this to be achieved, all resources must be declared as the common heritage of all Earth's inhabitants. Equipped with the latest scientific and technological marvels, humankind could reach extremely high productivity levels and create an abundance of resources. So here's the thing. I am not pro, if you've watched the Funk Clan, I really have a strong distaste for our current capitalistic system that, you know, exploits people for the benefit of a very, very few amount of people.
Right.
That said, this proposed solution makes it sound like there is just big vaults of food that the rich,
everyone gets what they want. Just go grab it.
It's just the problem is we don't open the vault enough, and that but you still have to have somebody make the food, and you still have to have some like these resources. Food should be for everyone. I'm like, okay, I agree with that.
I'm going back to my argument. It's because they think a Star Trek replicator exists because they watch too many episodes back to back, and they fall into the spiral.
It's so weird because it's just like it makes it sound like all resources, like there's like a town where all the food is and we just have to kill their mayor and then we'll all have food.
And it's just like
this weird conquest.
Here's the thing. I bet I totally would have bought all of this at one point, like 1 week when I was like 13 years old. Because I think everybody goes through this stage where you're like, oh, I know the solution. Everyone just has to be good. If everyone's good, then everything's going to be great. And then, you know, the world hits you and you realize it's not going to happen. And then sometimes I guess you don't. The world doesn't hit you. And then you make a whole website about it called the Venus.
Well, Project. I have a theory about this, but I have one more sentence and I want you to talk about projects. Okay. This is what we're going to be doing for the rest of the podcast. Sorry. This is how these work. Venus, last the time Venus Dan Project and I talked about the potato diet. For a long time.
I'd rather...
The resource-based economy concerns itself with three main factors: environmental, technological, and human. Buzzwords. We invite you to investigate further into these factors and discover more about the Venus Project and resource-based economy. How does it work? Okay. Let's talk about... So in my... I went to resource-based economy, which is right next to about, and then they have environment, technology, and human factors, and then each one of those has four subsections, one of which is semantics, which I really enjoy.
That one did jump out at me. The semantics.
It's just semantics. You don't have to read that section. This section is labeled semantics.
We need to redefine practical, because when you come at us and tell us that this isn't practical, it's really just a matter of semantics.
And the weirdest thing about this is it's all based around this guy named Jack Fresco.
Yep.
And that makes it another deity project of like he foretold that.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about the projects because I've been excited here to talk about the projects.
Yes, okay, sorry.
You're like, oh, wow, that's a pretty bold, I don't know, maybe their top project is to, I don't know, conceptualize all this in like a one big book that they could propose to cities or, you know, maybe studies to prove some of their concepts. Their top project's called Transcription Project. Below, you will find the progress on our efforts to transcribe 864 lectures by Jacques Fresco and the amount of funds spent. The original funds allotted to this purpose was set at $25,000 attained from a matching donations campaign. So basically, their main concern right now is just transcribing 864 lectures by this dude. So yeah, it's definitely a cult. This is a cult.
this is terrifying.
He's the L. Ron Hubbard of the Venus
the
Project.
The original funds, a lot of the purpose was set at 25 and attained a matching donations campaign.
Oh, boy.
Okay, first of all, what? So what are you going to do with... Did it say what they're going to do with them?
Let's see. Remaining funds will pay freelancers, transcribe if you have English... Nope. No,
oh
it doesn't
God.
Say. They just want to have them,
dude.
I guess.
Dude, so it says, if you have English literacy skills and would like to improve the quality of the text and make it more suitable for publishing, consider volunteering to our transcription team to help proofreading. Then there's a comment section. Are you ready for this?
And it's a WordPress comment section, I should add.
Yeah. My man Duncan, that's his username, comes for their throats. He says, what a monumental and ironic waste of resources.
But wait. Read the whole comment because he comes back around and he finishes up with, put that money into advertising. So he's still bought in on the Venus Project. He just feels like their focus is in the wrong spot right now.
What a monumental and ironic waste of resources. What an incredible comment. And then someone says, what are you saying? I don't know. Why are you saying like this is what Velkrama says. And Velkrama is definitely the second in line to the throne of the Venus Project.
Now, hold on. She was... Taylor Miller has a word to say on this. And this is, by the way, definitely not a cult. Taylor says, I thought that at first, too. I get wanting to document his great mind and work, but it would benefit the world so much more if that money was put into helping get the word out about his ideas in a huge way. That's what big companies and corporations do. They pay celebrities and government officials to endorse and promote whatever they want you to buy or believe, and actually brainwash society into doing whatever they want. We as a human race are slaves and are too ignorant to see that or even want to try to understand how that happened and what we need to do to change that. And then Renee
says, I'm sure there isn't enough money to do that.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. I am in love with this. So Taylor's whole thing was, we should brainwash people.
Right. We need to do what they do and brainwash people.
We do it because they know what they're doing because they brainwash people and make us slaves. We should make people slaves. Michael Morris says, I agree, but it is our job to advertise. This is a cult.
And this was 2020, so this is only last year.
This is very recent.
Wow.
Tyler says that he works in advertisement. Advertisement has too many cons at the moment and would not get the return on investment. If people didn't write down what the Greeks said, how would we have formed the American democracy? Tyler knows why we need to transcribe 864 lectures that this guy gave. It's because if we don't, how would we have created America?
I need to properly worship Jack. And to do that, I need to buy this volume of 864 transcribed lectures for the low price of $400.
Eric Clare says, Tyler is absolutely right. On any project, priorities have to be projected and resources allocated by degree of importance.
There's a whole team here. There's a second project called the Center for Resource Management. All right, we're finally getting into something a little practical here. They're going to make things happen. The Venus Project has begun development of its next phase, the Center for Resource Management. This facility will showcase the Venus Project's vision and will act as a stepping stone towards the development of our proposed network. So you just want to build a physical website. Like, you want to build your website, but in a physical space. And that's your second. There's no actual, they're not making anything. They're not trying to make the city.
Where did this start? How did these people get into it? What is going on?
Don't dig too deep. So... I told you, you dig too deep in these sorts of things. And before you know it, there's a car outside your house that you didn't see there before.
I'm going to come back in like a week and be like, okay, so I know I was pretty negative last week, but I looked into it and they have some points.
If you're willing,
it doesn't make sense that we don't have food. We should. Second,
there's a seminar, Rob. I want you to come check it out. It's only $130. If you can get five of your friends to come, then you get to go for free. So, and then they get five of their friends to join, and then we make the Venus Project a reality.
So, I'm excited to hear more Fresco recordings. Is this a cult? Can somebody look up if this is a cult? The Venus Project. Cult.
Jack Fresco recording.
Forbes, September 1st, 2020, said, is the Venus Project the next stage in human evolution?
No. Next question.
No. Okay. Anyone else? Any
now,
other theories?
Now I'm like going back. Well, one, I'm curious because people did on that video I made reference the Venus Project, and that was years ago. So the project itself must be longer than just last year. Two, this changes everything. When I first heard about it, I was like, oh, it's probably some plan from the 60s that like sputtered out and just didn't go anywhere. I didn't think it was like a modern day something they're actually trying to do right now. Because now that those comments feel less like, oh, here's another corner of history you should explore, and more like, hey, check out our cult. Don't like it.
So John said in the chat that he thinks it's possible to feed, clothe, and house everyone, which I also agree with. It's just this,
not through a futuristic city in which
I feel that this is a scam.
I don't know.
It feels like this
to me. It's just like, I think the internet does what the internet does, which is create places where people, like-minded people, can get together and just reinforce their thoughts. And one group out there is like the, you know, to their credit, very optimistic futurists who want to see the world better, but then to like an unrealistic degree where we're, you know, suddenly dropping currency and we're all living in these communes and nobody's around to be like, hey guys, this is a pretty crappy idea. Like, maybe, you know, maybe we shouldn't have a section on semantics here.
It's also one of those things that, like, it refuses to say, like, it refuses to say the first step is, like, wealth redistribution, like, or tax the rich. Anything substantial like that, because I'm pretty sure they want money from rich people, and they don't want to turn people off by saying the things that you actually need to do, like, I don't know, make sure that rich people pay taxes so we can use that money.
And anything and, like that is just, like, any tangible first step can just be attacked and you know, pulled apart. But if it's just an ideal, it's bulletproof.
I am so fascinated.
This is it. There goes the other half of Defunctland. It's just going to be the Venus Project.
I just am so blown away by the Venus Project. I want to infiltrate it. Okay, so there cities in the okay, so environment, cities in the sea. I'd love to see that. A global network of such. So this is we're gonna improve the environment by building cities in the sea.
It's so much easier to dump our garbage right in the ocean if it's right there.
It's just a click. It's just right there. I know what will solve our problem. Cities in the sea. A global network of such cities in the sea can easily accommodate many millions of people and relieve the land-based population pressures. They can provide the inhabitants with information and serve as natural sea aquariums without artificially enclosing marine life. How so? No idea. Many of these cities may serve as oceanographic universities. I've never heard oceanographic. I've heard oceanography, but oceanographic universities that maintain the ecological balance of marine systems.
This person rode Horizon, and they saw the scene.
Sea farms. It was like if you it's like if Horizons was a cult,
which it kind of is. Let's be honest, it is a little bit. It is a little bit.
Still, others may monitor and maintain environmental equilibrium and reclaim dangerous radioactive and other pollutant materials that have been dumped into the sea. Oh, well, that's the answer. Is if you just see some trash floating by, just go grab it because you already live there. Because people do that by their own homes. Okay, so this is just a bunch of bull crap. This is not even... Okay. So what? There's another project. Center for Resource Management. The Venus Project has begun development of its next phase, the Center for Resource Management. The facility will showcase the Venus Project's vision and will act as a stepping stone toward the development of our proposed network of cities.
Yeah, it's just their website. They want a physical website. They want a building that feeds you everything you could see right now on their website. That's it. It's like, it reminds me so much of me when I was in like high school and I was trying to write scripts because I wanted to be a filmmaker and I love sci-fi. And I was like, oh yeah, cities in the ocean and you could drag them to different places and anchor them down. But it was movies, you know, I didn't actually think we would live like that.
Is it a cult? Is it a cult is my question.
There's a store where you can spend a decent amount of money on things. So yes, I think the answer is yes. It's just like a light cult. It's like a diet cult. You know, it's not – they don't want your blood.
The Venus
Project
is a communist cult that promotes architect Jacques Fresco's vision of the future. Okay. Well, okay.
That doesn't sound like an accurate
– Okay. The goal of the Venus Project to create representation. Yeah, see, I don't like how it's called a communist cult, but because this is clearly meant for rich people with money, right? Like that are easily fooled. It doesn't feel like it's actually proposing any communist based.
I don't know. It feels like this goes beyond. This isn't communism. This is just pure. I don't know if there's a word for it. Just like, you know, pure untouched idealism is what it is.
Is this optimism? Is it?
I think in some when you, I mean, unless who knows, right? Because it could just be that it's all a scam to sell stuff, and the people at the top are just like laughing at the thought of this. But if assuming they're buying what they're selling, then it's definitely optimism, because they just. It ignores all of the obvious flaws and all these problems. Whereas like a realistic approach would be like, all right, this is the vision of the future we have. This is everything that's wrong with our vision, and this is how we're going to overcome it. This is just like, yeah, everyone's just going to have resources because they're all ours and we'll just all have them together. That's optimism.
Why I left the Venus? What do you mean left?
Oh boy. Oh boy. Here
we
go.
Did you work there? Did you work there or were you part of it? How I escaped the Venus Project. When I was a kid, my father took me to Morocco, blah, 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 blah. As I got older, 2020, I accidentally got into a course. Basically, I learned about how up the world was. Oh, but that's a direct quote. Sorry. Again, excuse my French. I learned that Fresco's ideas and the organization of TVP are two very different things. She says, my TVP journey. TVP, the organization, has a rigid hierarchical structure centered on Roxanne.
Uh-oh.
The TV show?
I don't know.
Or no, that's Roseanne. The song?
Oh.
The almost the everything that goes on in TVP this? Has to be approved by Roxanne, who is by no means an expert on everything. Many TVP, especially old-timers, are so bad at communicating and collaborating with others that they actually contradict what they teach, what Jock used to talk about. Many TVP people are so emotionally attached to TVP that they will not question it, neither the ideas behind TVP nor the organization. I brought up topics like how will the values of the people living in TVP's experimental cities change if they are still influenced by the outside world, which seems like a very easy question, a very, very fair question.
Yep.
In the POC chat before I left, and I don't know what POC stands for. I doubt people of color. I left and some people replied that it was inappropriate to discuss this and or TROM, which I'm not sure what that is, in the POC chat. You can read my entire last discussion with the POCs here. What does POC mean? Point of contact. Okay, wait. I immediately volunteered to help and gave them my contact information. Sasso said that they would get me into the next orientation process, which they use the initials OP, to become a point of contact, which is the POC, for TVP, which is the Venus Project.
This is also cult-like. They've got...
This is really
maybe
bad.
We should have read the semantics section of the website. We would have a better understanding of all these terms.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. The plan. Raise awareness through things like books. I didn't give up on the idea of an RBE after learning how TVP was run, but I did understand that extremely unlikely. Oh my gosh.
I mean, they're using...
They want to build a theme park.
All right. Fun rides?
It all comes back around. So they wanted to build a theme park after they built the city.
They're going, okay. They're just following Epcot to a T, but they didn't realize that.
They're following Epcot. Yeah. Like reverse Epcot. The other part of the plan is a bit more complicated. We raise enough awareness, but let's not forget to ask the question. Oh my gosh, this is a huge article on the Socio-Binary Education Project. What is going on here? Even if the city is super efficient and self-sustainable, it will still require some resources from the outside world. Therefore, it will still have to use money and trade. Yes! Yes, of course! But how would that work in your magical society where you don't need and you can just grow everything?
Kevin, that is an inappropriate question to ask.
That's an inappropriate question. If these people are still concerned about how to earn money so they can get some stuff from the outside world, then I really don't see how building an experimental city would change anything.
I want to know more about the theme park, because all it says here, it's a theme park that will entertain and inform visitors about humane and environmentally friendly lifestyles. That sounds like a real snooze fest to me. I need to know what roller coasters are in there. What e-tickets are we getting?
Where's Guardians of the Galaxy?
Exactly. Nobody wants this edutainment.
This
isn't Epcot. Come on.
Think about what's actually scarce in our world. Not much. Okay. Sure.
I mean, there's actually a lot that's pretty scarce.
Oh, this isn't good. You can trade money to get that food. You can also trade Bitcoin, labor, sex, and other products. Bitcoin, labor, sex. My Venus Project story.
As we all know, Bitcoin, fantastic for the environment.
In general, I think it's a big red flag that TVP doesn't have an aligned and detailed idea of the core problem their organization is trying to take. Oh my gosh, this is so great. I want to infiltrate them now.
Here's what we got to do. We got to turn this into a whole. You got to capitalize on this. You're going to infiltrate them, and you're going to become the biggest supporter of the Venus Project, and then I'm going to become the most outspoken opponent of the Venus Project, and that's going to be your season four arc, is going to be the war between two friends who are broken apart by visions of the future, and then we're going to come together at the end and defeat the Venus Project.
This is the problem with all ideologies, is it is completely not possible. But so they have this meme on here that says day one of learning about TVP. There's absolutely no way this could work. Day 15. It could work, but one does not simply change the world. And in day 30, needed for our survival, a resource-based economy is inevitable. The transition is now. And that is that is the problem with these kind of, in my opinion, as these wide-reaching ideologies, is you can get invested in them yourself, and you can convince yourself that they're possible. But then that conviction of their possibility is what turns other people off to believing you.
Which, you
because
know,
what you're proposing is literally impossible.
You know, that's if you were to – what you just said can be applied to a lot. And, you know, we talked about Epcot a lot. And I feel like a lot of that could apply to discussions you see online about Epcot today, just in terms of how passionately some people might support different visions of Epcot. So I guess it's fitting that this is all like Epcot-esque.
I'm not – well, someone said in the chat – John said in the chat that it is possible. It is possible, but it won't happen.
It's one of those
and
things
that's where – that's where my disconnect comes. It's like it's – I want – like if I had the – if you had the magic wand, then maybe. But you don't, so you can't. And so
– and it certainly won't look like that. As what I also think.
John, has John been turned on to the Venus Project? John, are you part of the Venus Project? John, you've heard of the Venus Project? No. Okay. Yes, it is possible, and it should happen, but it won't. That's kind of my problem with something like this. Is it something that won't happen? It just won't. It won't. Maybe it's just been a terrible 2 years and I'm just too pessimistic. And that this optimism,
I mean, look,
any optimism.
Some aspects of it might happen one day, but it's never going to happen like this where somebody's like, well, I started a website. I gave it a name as a project and then it gained enough traction and hey, the world was changed. It's like the sort of thing where, you know, we hopefully improve for the better over the course of decades and centuries. And maybe we'll get to a point where we are living on a city, but not like this.
This is the goalpost. Okay. I mean, it's just – but also it's so based on architecture. It's not just – I mean, okay, resource-based economy. Everyone should have food, bare minimum. That is something people have been proposing forever. I agree with it. I know it's possible. Same thing with energy. A little more difficult, but potentially you could get there as well. I mean, you have to do with these one step at a time. It's just guaranteeing those things are absolutely possible, but – they're possible in our current system.
And also
– and so John is saying that, you know, John's saying about capitalism plus guaranteeing food, clothing, jobs, and housing. And I totally agree with that. I think that is absolutely possible. That is our current system. Like we could guarantee food, clothing, jobs, and housing within our current monetary system of paper dollars. We would just have to, you know – make laws.
Right. And it would require, I think I think the difference becomes
or divert resources.
You don't have
what this is saying is no money. No, zero money. No more. That's what it's saying, right?
And, but it's also a project that is everything. It is X, Y, and Z. It's A, B, three, you know, everything in the alphabet. You know, it's all of it together, which is not how, like, maybe you have a project that's all about making sure everybody is fed, which is a noble goal and one that I agree I think could happen. But you, the amount of work it's going to take, that it should be its own project. And then maybe another one for housing and another one for, you know, just wealth redistribution. But like when you take it all and you put it all together under one project, like Project Venus, then you can't put, like, you're not going to have the energy or the resources to focus on every issue the way you'd need to. And so none of them get, you know, it's the jack of all trades, master of none sort of situation, which is what I think makes these projects look silly, because, you know, it's like saying I'm going to fix everything all at once, and you can't do it that way. It's going to be a little bit here and there, and each one's going to have its own group focusing on it.
I believe that in 100 years, we as a society should and probably will, hopefully, if things are going well, guarantee food, shelter, and housing of some sort to all citizens. That would be great, and I think it's absolutely possible. Other countries already do it. What I don't think would ever happen, and maybe it's just my own naivete or my own pessimism, but is that one day the government will be like, we are getting rid of money. Money does not exist anymore.
Just
have fun.
Welcome to the purge.
Welcome to the night. Like, money does not exist. And it just, and then when, what this is proposing feels like, it just feels insincere. Because it makes you feel bad for not believing in it, which is why I think people believe in it.
Well,
but it makes you feel bad. You're like, you don't believe in a world where children could have food. I'm like, no, of course I do. You don't believe that's possible? I'm like, of course it does. Then why can't we get rid of money? And I'm like, well, we can't just get rid of money. Like, people owe me money.
Just get rid of your money, Kevin. Just go right now, empty your wallet. Just set it all on
just
fire.
Just start bar. Who is making the food?
Cooks. Chefs.
Who is? But why are they making the food?
I don't know.
Because they get some of the food?
That reminds me.
Do they need wood?
Have you ever?
Do the chefs need wood?
Have you ever read?
Have you seen the show?
Oh, we're about to both recommend something.
Okay, what have you read?
Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom.
You know, you've told me to watch it.
It's a book. Don't watch it. Nothing will happen. You got to read it. It's a post-scarce society where nobody has to work anymore, so everything everybody does is just purely because they enjoy it. And that book ends up being about people who work at the theme parks just because they're diehard theme park fans. But it raises that question that you just raised. Why would people do things like that if there's no, if they're not getting paid for it?
I found the name of the series that I was thinking of, which is Raising Hope, which is a sitcom. They had this episode, which I thought was really funny, where essentially their little town decided, we are no longer going to use money. We're just going to trade people for things. And it saw the progression of them bartering and trading for things, and then be like, hey, you sold me that for this, you sold me that for that, and then they created their own currency.
Made money
like in 2 weeks, and like they went from this whole optimistic idea of, we'll just, you know, trade what we give each other what we need, and then within a week or two they had created their own currency, which I thought was a fantastic example of exactly how this would go.
Yeah,
and that's the problem with capitalism, is it's the only system that self-regulates. Every other system self-implodes, at least from my very rudimentary knowledge of economic systems. But capitalism, because of its incentive-based system, which is also what leads to exploitation very quickly, is the same reason why it's so hard to dismantle, is because by the time you realize you need to dismantle it, the power is concentrated, then those that can dismantle it are the ones benefiting from it. So why would they? And that, you know, but other systems are predicated on the idea that everybody needs to be on board with not, you know, with no one pulling ahead like that and, you know, whatnot. It's a collectivism, which is better. So it's like, it's hard because it's like, well, also, I think I'm not going to solve the economic crisis, but like, yeah, just legislate. Just, we have a government for this reason. We need to, you know, we need to legislate these ideas
I don't think some random house in Florida has come up with the solution. The resource-based economy thing just...
I don't know, man. I think you just need to read, I don't know, 200 or 300 more of his transcripts, and I think you'll start to get it. That's what it is. That's why we need to transcribe these things. So you talked with Dan about potatoes, huh?
Yeah, I talked to you about the Venus. We ended today talking about capitalism.
Right, right. We started talking about the dismantling of capitalism. Potatoes. I feel equally ill-equipped to discuss either, to be honest. Unless we're talking French fries.
This Venus Project thing, I'm not done with it. I got to keep researching it. It sounds terrifying. You know, like, I don't know. Maybe they are just a bunch of optimistic individuals with a great idea of how, or with a, what they think is a great idea of how to beat the system. But
it sounds like
I do also like the approach that, and see, it goes against my own personal beliefs of like, and I know this is nowadays, and I don't need to get into politics, but I know nowadays kind of a lot of the online discourse, especially, is no negotiations, no compromise. You can't fix a broken system. Don't even try, you know, that kind of thing, right. which I understand where that comes from and where that frustration and anger. And also I kind of get it to a certain extent, but I'm also like, but can we compromise for now and keep moving the goalposts in our direction? Can we keep doing, you know, because it feels like we're in this, like, now we're just not moving anywhere because, you know, I shouldn't have to compromise with people that have terrible opinions. You know, like, yeah, you shouldn't, but you have to.
Right.
For now.
Not everything can be so binary.
Right. It's like, and what I love about things like the Venus Project and Epcot, it was literally like, well, we'll start here and then we'll expand and eventually it'll be everywhere. Like, we'll create our own little city and then we'll be perfect. And then everyone else will want to be us, or we'll just be so successful, we'll expand. And then one person is like, but where are we going to get rice? And they're like, what?
Right. And in Walt's case, he just died. And in this case, they just tell you it's not an appropriate question.
Well, this guy died too. So both had the right idea. They're now both immortalized in their ideas.
I don't know. It sounds to me like the man's trying to keep these ideas down.
Also, the whole futurism idea of like everyone's buildings are going to look the same. I'm like, yeah, that's great if you're the architect.
In high school, I lived in a neighborhood that was like that, where it was just everything was prefabbed and looked exactly the same. And the number of times I would lose track of where I lived going down the block, or I had to like pay special attention to where I was going because everything blended in with one another, is the worst design you could ever have for a city or neighborhood. Is just, why would you want to strip that individuality out of things? It looks neat, sure, but like in a sci-fi way, I don't want to live in it.
Okay, we got to stop talking about this and end this podcast. Everybody, thank you for coming and listening to us. Rob, thank you for coming. Would you like to plug your channel?
Sure. You can find my videos. They're 5 minutes long. They're usually 5 minutes long. They're about weird things all over the place. It's at Midway to Main Street on YouTube, and I'm tomorrow, or I don't know when this is going up, but I'm sure by the time you listen to this, I'll have that Land of Oz video up for everybody.
There you go. Well, Rob, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for opening my eyes to the Venus Project.
Yeah, yeah. I hope no one that's listening to this after the fact disagrees with me so intently about my opinions on futurism and pessimism that they unsubscribe to the Patreon. But if you're listening to this, thank you for subscribing to the Patreon. If you really hate these podcasts and want to change them, please join us live. And you know, if you can't update your donation, to join us live. And then, you know, add your opinions on what you think of Jacques Fresco and potatoes and Deal or No Deal and all sorts of different things. But I'm always glad to have a good friend on. And Rob, thank you for coming on.
Anytime. Anytime. Next time, potatoes.
Next time, potatoes. This time, resource-based economy.
Semantics.
Semantics.